Back, way back when, at the start of the coronavirus pandemic, remember that, there were a number of world leaders who downplayed its severity. A couple of them have been mugged by reality. They've been affected themselves in one case. They seem to have changed their tune. There's one leader who's still very much determined to go against the grain. That's Brazil's far-right president, Jair Bolsonaro. Now, he's doubled down on his position. The virus is just the sniffles. He's encouraging Brazilians to ignore social distancing rules. And that is a position, well, it may not be promising for his people, his country. It might put him in political trouble too. And he's finding himself in turmoil politically, and the country's economy is also in strife. So the pandemic, allegations of corruption, the economy, it's a trio of crises. Could they be Bolsonaro's undoing? To discuss, I'm joined by The Economist, Brazil correspondent Sarah Maslin. Sarah, welcome.
Hi, it's really good to be here. Last time I was on ABC about a year and a half ago, I had a coughing attack for about a minute, so I'm hoping to avoid that this time.
Well, if that happens this time, it has all sorts of signifiers that it may not have had a year and a half ago. Let's start.
I'm very aware of that.
Let's start with the pandemic. What's the latest situation in Brazil?
Look, it's really worrying here, to be honest. We've seen just a kind of explosion of cases. The curve has been going up for weeks now. And, Brazil's officially near 8,000 deaths. Yesterday's daily toll of 600 deaths was the highest yet. And what scientists say is it's really because people are starting to let up on the social distancing guidelines imposed by governors. And partly that has to be because of the message coming from the man on top. As you mentioned, he's, been dismissing the virus and playing it down. And, people seem to, be listening to that. And even while Brazilians are really scared, they're also not staying home.
How do Brazilians take that position in when confronted by the evidence of what the pandemic is doing? I mean, it's all very well to believe someone's rhetoric, but when you're confronted by the facts?
I think there's a few different things going on. I think, first of all, it is a different reality depending on where in the country you are. So here in Sao Paulo, the mega center of the country and the epicenter of the virus, some neighborhoods are hit worse than others. At the beginning, the virus was really, hitting the upper classes who had been traveling. And now it's moved much more into the poor neighborhoods and the favelas. And it's the public hospitals now that are filling up. So it could be that, higher classes and younger people are just kind of willfully ignorant. I think another thing is that some people really do believe that the economy suffering and their incomes falling is a worse outcome than, the potential public health problems of the disease. So there are a lot of people going out to work and going out in these car parades that have been happening every weekend, demanding that, that the governors allow businesses to reopen. And so certainly part of the population is very afraid for their, their financial situation, even if that puts them at risk.
Those tensions are remarkably in parallel with those of the United States, that same thing of federal leadership acting often at odds with state or even lesser rungs of political leadership, of that popular movement to open up. It's very resonant.
That's right. And I think both in the US and here in Brazil, that's really confusing for everyday people. I mean, there's very good media here in Brazil, but not everyone has access to it. You know, the number one news source is WhatsApp, and lots of stuff is going around, you know, about the disease and possible cures and, you know, whether things are open or not, or they should be open or not. And I think for, you know, for an everyday Brazilian, that mixed messaging, you know, from different authorities is really confusing and is part of why people haven't necessarily been doing what's right for the public health situation.
From where you are in Sao Paulo, Sarah, I mean, give us a picture of that press of humanity, because that's the extraordinary thing about that mega city and about so many other parts of Brazil, is the compression of people.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I'm going to get it wrong if I try to offer a figure, but there are millions and millions of people living in this city. And, you know, it's, if you have seen a skyline in New York or in Hong Kong, in Sao Paulo, it's 360 degrees of skyline. And you know, there are sort of wealthier neighborhoods, but also favelas, which are sort of informal settlements where people have kind of built you know, houses out of cinder blocks, often with, you know, dozens of people living under the same roof. And in a lot of those places, it's important to mention, even if people are trying their absolute hardest to abide by social distancing, it's just impossible when you've got so many people living in the same place.
And these are people too. I mean, economically, this is where the great pressure comes to rest. People who work for cash, people whose incomes are precarious, whose working lives are precarious, and they can't tuck themselves away and work from home.
That's true. Yeah, when I have gone out a couple times with with a face mask to one of the favelas, and one thing that a lot of people there tell me is, you know, we're not a home office culture. That's a word that, you know, the media has been using here in English. They say homey officey, which for upper classes means one thing, but people in favelas, that's totally foreign. So you do see still, you know, hot dog stands open, even little cell phone shops open. All the businesses in the favelas are open because people rely on that income just to get by. And the government has introduced a monthly benefit to informal workers of about, you know, $110 a month, which certainly helps, but is, you know, a pretty small amount given that it's a pretty expensive city. And even in favelas, rents are very high here in Sao Paulo.
Outside of city living, there are concerns too about how the virus might impact indigenous communities in the Amazon.
Right. So one of the places that has been hit the hardest in Brazil is Manaus, which is a city of a couple million people in the middle of the Amazon. But unlike Sao Paulo, it's also a place where people from really, really remote communities kind of come in to restock and resupply, including a lot of indigenous communities that, you know, some of which are on indigenous reservations and other ones that have, you know, little cities of their own. And there's already been, you know, a few deaths in those communities. And the worry there is less of a biological one, right? Because we're, you know, we're all new to this disease, and more of one that has to do with the fact that they really don't have healthcare in a lot of these places. And, you know, it's many hours often on boats that are no longer coming regularly to reach a hospital. And even the hospitals in Manaus, the, you know, this city of a couple million people, are at complete capacity, you know, don't have respirators, don't have enough staff, and are really suffering right now.
Bolsonaro is holding the line. He's doubling down, as I said at the beginning here. And yet, reality is slowly but surely conspiring against him, is it not, Sarah? There are stories around corruption. The economy is regardless of the effects of the pandemic, is in a weak and struggling state. I mean, are the political forces conspiring against him here? Can his presidency see out this moment?
So there's a saying here in Brazil that you know, that we journalists know very well, that something like Brazil is not for beginners or for amateurs. there's a lot of different things going on. So you mentioned the economy. Brazil's economy has been struggling for years now after a really deep recession in 2015 to 2016. And Bolsonaro's government kind of came in promising to do two big things. One of them was to pass a bunch of reforms to get the fiscal deficit down and get the economy in conditions to start shining again. And the other thing was to tackle political corruption. And he's really struggling on both those counts. With the economy, they managed to get a big pensions reform passed last year, but haven't really gotten a lot of the other reforms off the ground. And then now here this pandemic comes and is requiring them to spend tons of money that they don't really have to deal with it. And then, then they've got this now big political crisis. A week ago, the justice minister resigned and accused the president of trying to obstruct justice, in particularly in changing the director of the federal police. So why did that happen? there are ongoing investigations into all three of the president's eldest sons, who are also politicians. One of them is being looked at for money laundering and possible connection to right-wing organized crime groups called militias. And the other two are being investigated for being involved with this massive fake news network that may have been involved in organizing some of these big protests that have been happening against the Supreme Court and, often calling for a kind of a return to military dictatorship. So Bolsonaro, the president, got rid of the police director, and promptly his justice minister, who is a very beloved anti-corruption warrior here in Brazil, resigned and accused him of doing that to try to protect his family.
Statecraft in this populist far-right regime seems increasingly complex, Sarah, the more time goes on. And yet, from what you said about the resonance of Bolsonaro's message around the pandemic, he still would seem to have substantial public following, that his popularity is undimmed by all these factors, these crises surrounding him.
So that's the thing. It's extremely scandalous, but I think I would still say that he is not going anywhere anytime soon. There are investigations now into his sons and into whether he himself obstructed justice, and a lot will depend on what comes out of those investigations. But for the time being, his survival depends on this sort of roughly a third of Brazilians who still support him, according to polls. And, a lot of that is because of they agree with his message that Brazilians have to get back to work. They also support his kind of conservative values, his religious values, and his hate for the left, which governed Brazil for years. And then the other thing is that he is going to probably manage to avoid impeachment, at least in the short term, because Congress here in Brazil is very pragmatic, let's say. So he's now kind of structuring deals with all sorts of these little parties that are referred to here in Brazil as physiological parties, because they really, what they want more than anything else is money for projects back home that'll make them look good, and jobs in the government that they can hand out to their friends. And so he, even though he came in saying that kind of government is what he, wanted to avoid and would never do, now he's starting to do it to save himself.
Well, Sarah, Brazil, not for beginners, or it would seem for the faint-hearted. You must take exceptional care of yourself. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sarah Maslin, she's Brazil correspondent for The Economist.